So, I mean, did any of you guys play the Fusion Frenzy demo?
Yeah, I
And
remember that.
never buy the full game and just keep
Never
playing
bought
the
it.
never keep playing the demo because it was just so much content.
Yeah, it was weirdly a large amount of content for that one game. I'm like, okay, what if we got the full version? But why though?
And you all wonder why they don't do demo discs anymore. You're the problem.
Now, listen, Prey 2 had a demo, and the demo was buy it, play it for less than 2 hours, and return it on Steam.
Just a reminder, this is a spoiler-heavy podcast. Different series that require a spoiler warning will be in the description.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Gaming Theater Podcast. Today's episode is going to be all about the rise and fall and rise-ish of demos and video game demos. With this, to help me explain this topic, I have several guests with me. Now, once again, my name is Leo. I am the Geek Scorpio, and I'll be your host this evening. And over to my right is going to be...
Hi, my name is Dean Dane. I'm a charity-inclined TTRPG and video game enthusiast on Twitch TV and other places on the internet. I remember when demo discs came in magazines, and I thought this episode was about Deimos. Stay tuned.
The demon Deimos?
Yeah.
Only if that's part of that Deimos.
I was hoping for the rise of him and the rise-ish. You know, I missed that guy, but excited to talk about it.
All right. But over to their right is going to be...
Hi, I'm Ashwood of Ashwood Audio. We're at twitch.tv. I'm your fancy-focused charity streamer, and you can consider this a demo of my presence over on the stream.
Hey.
Nice. All right. And over to their right is going to be...
My name is Liz, also known as Zombie Hand. I do a lot of work with GTP. I'm an artist, cosplayer, soon again. I'm so excited. And yeah, I'm just here to always help support GTP.
All right. We appreciate it. And over to their right is going to be...
Yo, I am Tomato Man, also known as Brandon, or whichever direction you want to take that. And I do a lot of video stuff, and I also do work with GTP, and we're working on a very, very time-consuming project that seems to never end because things keep happening.
Yeah, that's kind of happened. Maybe you'll have a demo of that project. Uh-huh. Huh?
We technically do. We have a trailer out. And then
oh,
I did a
that's
mock-up
true.
of the DVD.
After all, trailers are the demos of movies.
That's true.
I mean,
Yeah, that's what I said.
All right, and over to their right is going to be...
Hi, I'm Ian, Historic Nerd. I do retro gaming historian, history retrospectives. I can't talk anymore. Don't know why I'm even trying. I do those on YouTube, Historic Nerd. Yeah.
All right, before we get started, let's take this over to the Magical Merch Booth. All right, Ian. You want to do the magical merch booth section?
Yeah, sure. I'll talk about what I'm working on. So, as I said earlier, I do retro gaming historian type videos. Working currently on researching deeper into the birth of the Philips CD-i because I'm a psychopath and enjoy arguing with Dutch people on the internet to get more information that they will not share with anyone. So, yeah, I'm working on that for a bit. I might get that out at some point next year, but that's kind of the only project I've really been heavily working on. But yeah.
I do have to say, I have really enjoyed your series on instruction manuals.
Mm-hmm.
Learning how to work at, say, Burger King has been a lot of fun.
Oh, God. So that was a live stream I did with the Philips CD-i. Because the Philips CD-i was such a prolific kiosk device and edutainment type device. What's kind of fun is the U.S. military has some training simulators on it, notably for the 1993 version of the Bradley fighting vehicle. But also there's a great training video for Burger King, which teaches you all manners of things, interactive tests and all these things where you have to learn how to run the broiler. And remember, you're always an important part of the guest experience at Burger King. If you don't care about that, get the fuck out.
True.
Oh, apologize. I don't know if I can curse on this. I apologize.
No, yeah, yeah. We're leaving that part in.
We're adult and spoiler heavy.
Yeah, occasional live streams, but yeah.
Spoiler heavy. It might help you get night shift manager at Burger King.
It might. But you gotta be serious about keeping those patties at least a quarter inch apart. If you go more than that, get out.
Leave, you scrub.
Yeah, anyway. get out of this Burger King.
Yeah.
All right. But with that being said, let's go ahead and back to the show. So here we are talking about the rise and fall and rise-ish of demos, because there was a and we have to say it that way because there was a point in time where demos just for video games ended up going away for a while. And we'll explain where that leads in. But to start off, we kind of have to go back to the beginning. And by beginning, we're probably going to go into the 70s for this one. So let's say you're a game manufacturer. If it's in the 70s, you only really have enough time to make one game, right? You have to, from start to finish, you make the programming for it. And what you would do is that you would try to pitch it to other people. So unlike demos that we know now, you would go to different places. There's, I think, famously, like Midway, I think, would actually go to local bars downtown near their offices and try to pitch their video game for it. So what you would do is that they would set up the video game. It would have different quarters and be a quarter muncher, and people would come check it out. And then periodically, if other people outside of that would be invited in to look at this game live in the bar setting. This is sort of where we have that. If you've ever found it, there's certain video games, like I know Donkey Kong has it. They're called cocktail games because they're designed with a flat base. So that cabinets. Way you can put a drink on top of it. Which is funny, because if you ever go to any of those retro arcades, I will put my drink on the thing, and then one of the managers or someone will come up to me, hey, you can't keep your drink there. I'm like, I know this. This is what it's supposed to be. This is why we have this. That's why it's called cocktail style.
The new ones actually come with cup holders attached to them, which is like,
Well, that's because arcades are now back in favor with the bar.
It's a very different mentality for them.
We used to be a proper country. That's all I'm saying.
But then we get over to about Atari era when we start bringing up consoles. Well, now you have a home market. You can't really pitch the home market to people who are in a bar. That's sort of two different ways to do it. Well, you can pitch it to that way with certain people because they're like, I can get a drink and this game, and then I can take my drink home and the game home. Yeah, that makes sense to me. You know there's going to be one guy who thought that. That was an interesting night of Mario Brothers. Anyway. So what we bring it to is that what they would do is create a demo or a demonstration. It's basically the short version of the game that they keep close to the vest. Typically, they won't. Back then, it wasn't, you weren't supposed to see the whole thing. They kept it close to the vest to be only shown at like trade shows or at marketing campuses, or they would invite people who have like large corporations for different like stores like Walmart or Sears, Roebuck, or various other stores, and invite their salespeople there to try to demonstrate what this game would be and basically pitch sell them. And then if they get if the demo works great, then you'd get the whole thing for that. But they just want enough to get you interested, not enough to you know, beat the whole game. And most of that's part of a sales tactic, if I recall, because like if they know that you can beat the game, and especially in the United States, because we have a whole rental system. If they know that you can beat the game on that.
Yeah. How does a demo given to the consumer differ from a tech demo?
Does anyone playability know? Usually.
Same. I would like you all both to say more on that.
Yeah. So a tech demo is usually, let's take the NES, for example. You would set up a full-on NES, you would put in the game that you want into the Nintendo, and then you would leave it as a kiosk for people to play and try out. So you're showing off the technology on it. In fact, with a lot of those type of demos, they'll have a timer in there. So that way it would shut off after or force a reset when it gets to a certain point for that. But you're only there to really demonstrate it. Now, tech demos also could be just concept demos. And sometimes the concept is so good that somebody hops onto it. I know Dead Rising, that we talk about a lot, started originally as a tech demo for that one to show, no, the Xbox 360 can do a lot more than you think if we can, but we just have to adjust it. And they showed, yeah, I have about 1,000 zombies on screen. We didn't have 1,000 zombies before, and now we do. Enjoy that.
So I've always separated them as like the tech demo being the not necessarily just visual fidelity, but the like you say, the technology fidelity, like what the machine or the system is capable of versus what you actually get to experience. Because you see a bunch of tech demos, usually, at least like in the days of E3, which is now long gone, if it said tech demo, it was just a visual presentation to show the engine running, not necessarily for you to touch it. But then you've got the playable demos, which would be at the, you know, the booth where people could actually try a vertical slice of the game.
I got to, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, which is what you got in, you know, magazines and stuff down the road. A good example would be like, oh, the Final Fantasy VII tech demo for PS3 that took two console generations basically for them to force into existence being a playable thing.
Oh, what was that, Sonya?
Oh, I was just thinking, so I used to go to San Diego Comic-Con before it got insane, like ridiculous. And I loved when they had demos there because they would have some new games. So Square, I got to play the Final Fantasy 13 2 demo. And then I got to play the Resident Evil Darkseid Chronicles demo and Resident Evil 6. And it's just like, I miss those days where you got to actually go and have, like, I don't know, demos at, I mean, Comic-Con was obviously one of the better places to like have a demo. Just because you got to like massive amounts of people, like over 100,000 people, you know, so that was always really cool. But not to be a little bit predictable while we're talking about tech demos, Alan Wake's American Nightmare.
Yeah.
I said not to be totally predictable, but I will find a way to work it in. Technically, Alan Wake's American Nightmare was the tech demo for Quantum Break. They created Alan Wake's American Nightmare as a way to showcase their new engine that they were building Quantum Break in, so that they could show Microsoft, like, hey, we're going to have a better engine, we're going to do so much better, and then they got greenlit for Quantum Break.
That's an interesting crossover there of a playable demo with a tech demo, because you've got something where it's, you're getting to play a example of the engine, even if it's not the product the engine's being designed for, if that makes any sense. It's really weird to contextualize that one.
Yeah, like Alan Wake's American Nightmare is a fully playable short game DLC thing. You know, it takes about like 3 hours to play. But yeah, it was actually designed for them to show Microsoft, this is what we would be able to do in this engine with or for Quantum Break. Please let us make Quantum Break.
Please, that'd be good. But yeah, so like tech demos are mostly, I want to say saying it's hardware isn't exactly the right way, I think, to do it, but
it's demonstrating, not, but it's close.
But it's close. It's like demonstrating what we can do for this, whereas
I guess it's what the engine can do with that hardware. So it's like, how does the software function with the hardware?
Yeah, I think that's the best way to put that. But yeah, now that we've entered into the 80s, where the age of the PC is starting to rise up for it, people had different takes on how demos worked on that. But so there's a few different ways that did. At this point, gaming magazines were coming around. They were kind of indie, I think, with gaming magazines early on in the early 80s, before we got to like Electronic Gaming Monthly and various other game things. But what they would do for the PC side is that they would have a disc that would come with the demo of the game that you could play. And then at the end of it, if you could get through it, it would have, hey, here's the release date of when the actual game is expected to come out. Check out your local game stores if it's there. But since it's the 80s, there's a chance the game never even shows up. That's also a thing that could happen.
I guess you could also say technically the game demo, even with the PC, kind of originates from software demos, not even just game demos. Like, because at that time, that's, I think, how John Romero and John Carmack decided how they got their whole thing going with id, was they were originally working with software that was bundled with magazine orders.
They worked for a company that basically would send out demos.
Yes.
It was a magazine.
It was software demos, model. Though.
Yeah, so they would do that, and they would go and actually, like, make... Masters of Doom, the book, actually talks about, like, what they ended up doing. And they borrow computers from the company on weekends to go work on Commander Keen at their, like, little lake house. So they would do that, like, steal them over the weekend. And then making, like, their own version of Mario Brothers. But, no, yeah, they worked for that, and that was a model where they would just basically... The magazine was like, hey... Subscribe and we'll send monthly / bi-monthly you know, software packages for you to mess with.
And that was one of their things on it. It's kind of related to this because what happens is Apogee, which is a big game company for the ages, a lot of their games are like still running around. You can find a bunch of them on GOG in a couple of places. But what they had basically what we would know as shareware at this point, kind of shareware. So they had two sort of ways of doing that. Shareware was you would get the demo of the game built into the game itself, happened to have a phone number at the end of the game itself, and that phone number will you can call it and put an order to get the actual game for it. And they'd usually come in like I think this like they're usually the first one or two levels of like a variety of different games on that.
You see, it's the drug dealer model of the
free,
and then they charge you for that after. But yeah, it was always that was a really common thing. But I would like to, I don't know if you guys have experienced this, but when I was growing up in Northern California, you'd walk into like a computer store or something like that, and by the front door there'd be a cardboard box of shareware games that you could kind of rifle through, and you could take the disc home and put it in your computer. And that's like, you know, one of those things that like socially you wouldn't want to do at all anymore, based on just.
Hey, just take the disc.
Security behavior, but yeah, but that was just absolutely common for the era. And then, like, you play the game, get to the end, and then you'd see the PO box number, you send a postcard or whatever to.
Yeah, you sent them a postcard, and then they would mail you back in a couple in a few weeks for whatever that game was. And because like some of those games, I remember that's how you had to get the original Civilization. But Civ was at the time technologically, I think it was like 2-3 discs. 3x5, but they also had the 5.5 floppy version, so that was like 20 of them.
But I noticed in the notes you had a Quake listed as one of the shareware ones, and what's fascinating about Quake is that id tried to do their basically the same thing they had done that was so successful shareware, but the mistake they made was they put them out on CDs, and so what ended up happening was they actually had the full game of Quake available on the CD. And then you would buy it, and then they would just send you a CD key that would unlock the rest of the game. And a lot of people figured that out almost instantly. So initially, Quake sales suffered horribly because of that that oversight in terms of id trying to want to control their distro model.
I remember there's Quake. It's either, I believe it's Quake or Doom. I think it's Quake, actually, that had the old joke. There is more copies of, there's more pirated copies of Quake than Quake. Like, they're just people would just keep copying and pasting it, and then you could just run that one CD key and it would crack the whole thing.
I mean, it was immensely common in the mid-90s, especially when like CD burners became affordable.
Oh yeah.
The main thing that kept like copy protection so well, basically a lot of companies didn't do it because like who's gonna have 10 grand to have a CD burner, right? And then that technology came down to like where it was like $300 for a CD-ROM with the CD burning capability, $200, $100. So like there were kids in like my high school that were running their own home business, just burning copies of games for people. So that was a whole thing that was happening in the 90s.
I don't want to talk about how I might have done this.
As long as it wasn't Nintendo games, I think you're fine.
Yeah, yeah. They're the hardcore ones. Yeah.
I'll come after your children.
There's a statute of limitations, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think so. I believe it.
yes, I too have heard about this allegedly in Minecraft.
Allegedly.
You actually reminded me, so I added a note for it to bring up once we get to the PlayStation era, but there I have an example actually of a home console shareware game.
Another weird kind of demo distribution model that I bumped into when I was doing some research on it. It's a weird one, but it was for Seventh Guest and Myst. No, but Seventh Guest specifically. They would have, keep in mind, in the early 90s and the late 80s, PCs aren't everywhere. Like, nowadays, you just have a computer, and that's about it, right? So what they would do is that they would have
right
computers,
here.
But, yeah, it's right there. I sees it. But what you would do is, they were adding on, they were selling CD-ROM drives. But to push the sale of CD-ROM drives, they were showing off how to, how this technology would work. So what they would do is that they would use Seventh Guest as the visual demo for that. And so what, and they're like, yeah, you get the CD-ROM drive. Oh, neat. What about that game over there? Turns out a good portion of CD-ROM drives back then were sold with Seventh Guest as a copy of it.
Mm-hmm. Boy, that would not fly today.
Well, I mean, just like Myst and Seventh Guest were one of those early innovators in multimedia in terms of how the gameplay happened and all that stuff. And a lot of the companies followed suit with FMV type stuff. But with especially like the PC revolution and MPEG capability and CD-ROMs becoming more prevalent, it definitely was a huge driver for adoption.
Yeah. But that was a different marketing tactic, that one. It's they wanted to sell CD-ROM drives, so they kept copies of Seventh Guest. You can get this game, and you've saw it before in the demonstration. And that's like that whole tech demo thing you were talking about, Dane. Mm-hmm. They were using Seventh Guest to show the visual tech demo of that. And now Seventh Guest was at one point in time the most popular FMV game out there. But that's kind of a weird misnomer because you got it with the CD-ROM drive.
I just realized I crossed wires. I was thinking Phantasmagoria. It's like, no, that would not fly as a freebie back then, or at least today.
One guy would love it.
I mean, Seventh Guest still has murder and all kinds of other horrible stuff in it.
Yeah.
Depending on how you actually play the game. But yeah. Mm-hmm.
We just stop the game before the murder happens.
Like, right before. Like, hard cut to black.
What is it? The demo... Did Sega CD have demos? Because I know one of the things that... I think Sega CD did.
Sega CD had, like, a sampler that came with it. I don't know if they did anything beyond that. And then they had, for the Saturn, they actually had what they called bootleg discs. Which, they I don't know why they called it that, because it's just an official demo disc.
Steal this, could you?
Which, I might as well throw it in now, because it actually relates to the Sega Saturn. Panzer Dragoon Saga was technically a shareware. There was a time where you could get the first disc of Panzer Dragoon Saga, and if you liked it enough, you could mail away to get the case and discs 2, 3, and 4.
Oh. That's an interesting way to do
it. At least that's what I'd heard. It's really hard to track down any information on this, because that game is already a nightmare to find as it is.
I remember back in the day, because I was one of those weird kids who wanted to get where everybody else was playing Doom and Quake, and I wanted to play, like, strategy games like Civilization and Sid Meier's Pirates and like Darklands and such. So and
XCOM. Let's not forget XCOM.
And XCOM. Yeah,
I feel like Leo just exclusively played Sid Meier games. That's the lore that I'm establishing.
So technically you're not wrong. Back in the day, there was a special demo disc that came with Jagged Alliance, the second Jagged Alliance game, or 1.5 Jagged Alliance game, like this weird. So they came with Jagged Alliance. It also came with XCOM. It also came with Sid Meier's Civilization. It was called all this big strategy pack. It also came with like. I forgot what it was called. I knew it was pretending to be World of Warcraft, StarCraft, but it wasn't very good. It was like, you had a base, the end. You can't expand. You only have 4 buildings. Enjoy. They're all, and they have like 10 thousands and thousands of health, but you only, every creature only does like 2. You'll be here for a while.
The original tower defense.
Oh, remember Command & Conquer came out and only had the 1 level?
Yeah, Command & Conquer had a level, 1 level. Which, by the way, trying to go back to the original OG Command & Conquer, I forgot that you could only click on the units one at a time. Drove me nuts.
Oh my god. No, how did you play that?
Not well.
Not well. Not well. I didn't say I beat Command & Conquer. I said I played Command & Conquer. These are 2 different conversation points.
This is true.
But yeah, sometimes with... and I bring this up because... strategy games and such are not exactly... They have a hardcore audience, so like once somebody starts playing that, they're kind of hooked to it. However, not everybody jive with those type of audiences. So what they would do is that they would set a game pack with all the same games for a strategy game, because they're more likely to get one of those down the someone would like it down the line for that. But they would come in packs. Like, there was, I remember there was an adventure pack, which it was a bunch of platform jump shooters, which sucked kind of the one I got to play, because it had Halloween Harry. And then it also had Duke Nukem. And then it also had Commander Keen. And it also had, like, three other ones, but they were basically the same game, just with different colored sprites for that one. How's it go? Just change it so it doesn't look like my homework originally.
Now, did you ever accidentally buy those, like, CD compilations that were just 100 different shareware games that were loaded onto it?
Yeah, and there's, like, only 10 good ones.
Well, no, my favorite thing was that I would say they were all decent-ish, but it was always like, oh, cool, I'm going to buy this pack. It's like 100 games. You're like, these aren't full games. These are just the shareware things that want me to buy the game at the end.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I'm like, I already bought this thing. I'm like, what the hell?
It's 100 level ones.
Yeah, I think I remember finding one of those on, like, a freaking PC or a computer software rack at, like, Ross when they used to sell computer software.
Was it that little box at the front door you were talking about?
No. This that was a computer shop, but like Ross, Payless, you know, like the clothing goods store, they used to actually have a PC game section
that you
go
gosh.
To and buy stuff from. But it was always like the shadiest stuff that was like dumped off the back of a truck that somehow ended up at like Ross, you know, Payless for clothing. But
it was always fun because
you'd find those shareware game compilation packs.
This is just 20 shareware games. Now I bumped into that. That's how I found out that there was a game called Wacky Wheels, which looks an awful lot like Super Mario Mario Kart, except it's like 5 years before 5 to 6 years before Mario Kart.
I think that model you're talking about, Ian, kind of survived into the mid to late 2000s.
I can believe that, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think because it's reminding me of like those like cardboard jewel cases that would be like 10 in one.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like just like a little bit of bejeweled, but not.
Yeah. I call those like the grandma getters, because it's your grandma walks by is like, oh, I love Bejeweled, and they buy that, and it's some weird variance where it's reskinned to like, oh, it's all got Pharaoh head characters from like ancient Egypt, but it's basically Bejeweled that's been reskinned, and they will play 30 different versions of Bejeweled, and they'll just keep buying those software packs, and of course they're loaded with spyware.
Mm-hmm.
It just was always a huge problem.
Most of the time there's only two games different, and I see games with giant air quotes between each pack.
So we're talking about all of those ones. Let's move on to the 90s and how, well, we're already kind of in the 90s right now. Because demos kind of move around. The big one in this one is, I remember PlayStation Magazine would have demos all the time. Like, you would get a PlayStation Magazine, you'd get a demo that came with it. Remember, that's how I played Final Fantasy VII the first time.
So, this was my jam. I absolutely loved the PlayStation 1 demos. As I was talking to Ian, actually, before everyone hopped on, Final Fantasy VIII's demo is just, like, drilled into my head, because the way the game, the way the demo starts up is like, oh, you have Zelda,
Rinoa,
and Squall,
like,
and
Irvine?
You're doing the first...
Oh.
Oh, or, no, it you're was Irvine, the... you're right.
No, because I know Rinoa was there, and I remember because you're doing the Dalit mission, and when you, I played the demo after I played the game, because I just happened to find the demo disc, and I remember when you're doing the demo, and you talk to Rinoa, because she's not supposed to be there, she just says ... Also, a really fun exercise in making yourself giggle is pronounce Rinoa like quinoa.
Oh my god.
That's just that makes me laugh sometimes.
The thing that always like threw me for a loop, because when I did eventually play the real game, the full game, I was like, this is not the same. What is happening? Because like they throw you into the early mission with these characters that you do not have, and with junctions and stuff that you do not have and do not know anything about yet. And it's like, I don't think I actually got Leviathan until disc two.
I think you get Leviathan in disc one when you, I think you have to draw it from Biggs and Wedge on when you're leaving the tower to go back to the beach. You draw Leviathan from one of them.
Are you sure that's not Siren?
No, I'm not sure.
I will say, as Xenogears is a demo, did the same thing in terms of having characters introduced at different points and the game actually pointing it out in some meta fashion that made it pretty interesting.
I remember I played the demo for Tomba number one. Couldn't find the game Tomba number one, but I played the demo of it.
Wait. Tomba or Tabal?
I don't remember exactly.
Because Tabal number one was a fighting game with the art by Akira Toriyama.
Not that one.
Tomba was the pink-haired man who's in, lives in a cave. That was a side-scroller.
That's the one.
Okay, there you go. Tomba.
Yeah. But I only played the demo of it and couldn't find it in stores for some reason. Yeah, but... And then when the PlayStation 2 came out, they still did that with demos and such. My favorite one is playing the demo to Orphan. I didn't realize that was most of the game of Orphan when that came out.
I was today years old when I learned this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was like one stage of Orphan, but it turns out that Orphan's not a big game.
You were right. It is Siren, and you don't get it from Biggs and Wedge. You get it from the Elverette boss.
Okay, I don't know why I thought... who it was you had to pull it from.
Yeah, I thought it was Biggs and Wedge, but no, you can just get magic from them.
So I have to ask the group here, in terms of going back to demo discs that released, were any of you guys like big PC gamer people back in the mid to early to late 90s?
Yes, I was a huge PC person, but I was a huge broke PC person. So I didn't get the latest and greatest. I got the hand-me-down to the hand-me-down. Well, everybody else is playing StarCraft. I'm still working my way towards, the original DuckTales 8-bit. I'm using Commodore 64 graphics here, buddy.
I did have some computer gaming. I did try Command & Conquer when I was young, and I was not good at it. I was probably like 8 or 9. I was mostly raised on the NES and the SNES, and Chip's Challenge, which was technically a computer game. And you can get it for free on Steam right now.
But I bring up PC Gamer because they actually had probably the most amazing demo discs released by any publisher in terms of from about 1993 forward to I think about 1998. They were doing these really innovative just FMV environments to where the entire game itself was an FMV game where you would navigate through the environment to get to the demos. But there was also like always a fun subplot going on within the games where certain stories would be played out over several months in terms of you unraveling it. And then basically while playing the FMV elements on the disc, you would discover things and characters like Coconut Monkey being introduced, which ironically Coconut Monkey is banned off of any comment filter that PC Gamer has. I don't know why, but might be racially insensitive. No idea. But anyway, it's one of those things where it's really fun mechanics and all these things that were just these amazing storyteller ways of introducing you to this content. But yeah, PC Gamer had that going on for it, and then they just kind of completely lost it.
Didn't PC Gamer used to have one that was like an art museum, but inside inside each of the paintings, one of them were the video for the demo of a game, but then one of them is playable?
I think that's possible. That might have been Computer Gaming World. I know they had their own.
Okay,
their
no, that's one.
But I could be wrong. But yeah, the PC Gamer had like their whole office thing that was a whole elaborate introduction. And that was through most of the early to probably like 98. Because I think around the time like Quake 3 came out was when they kind of stopped doing that model.
Yeah, you'll find that most of these models start stopping and such. It's kind of a weird case, but we'll get to that. Because these Apogee's model of the shareware version, they quit that in the mid-90s because... well, people were trying to hack the whole thing. Or there wasn't enough gameplay and people were just not calling or going to the store and just getting the whole thing if they could have a separate copy of it.
Well, you also like physical, like PC games made it into like major retailers. So there was really no reason to have that distro model anymore. Because before they were fighting for shelf space and, you know, clubs and small like little locations until, but like places like Kmart, Walmart, Target had their own massive PC game aisles, which gave them a lot of retail space that they eventually forfeit to Steam. But they had that model that was being quickly adopted in the late 90s to early 2000s.
Yeah, because it wouldn't make financial sense to go backwards on that one on the basis of no one's using it. The model, I remember shareware stayed around for a lot longer than people thought. I mean,
they tried it into, like, what, 2000 or something like that, but it ultimately ended up failing just because people were like, I don't want to give you my credit card number.
Yeah. I know, because like Fallout is how is a you can get the demo version of Fallout, and it's just one town with the battle with a single fight, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Hooked. That got me. You win, sir. But I do know that
changes.
But yeah, no, they sometimes they would have those kind of demos. The one thing I wanted to bring up, because in the PlayStation 2 eras especially, not all those demos were made fine. Now, I mean that the games worked, but they had aftermath problems. Metal Gear Solid 2, when that came out, Kojima put out a huge demo for it. I'm not sure if you guys remember, one of the things is that you could still take photos using Metal Gear Solid 2. Like, you can capture little pictures. So, here's the thing. The captured pictures stay on your memory card as a corrupted file.
Yep.
And so, you would have to... So what would happen is that it would eat space on your memory card, and now you don't have a good working memory card. You have to format the whole thing if you needed to.
Because you can't delete the file individually anyway.
Mm-mm.
That was a big problem.
I came back, we took like 16 photos of that. I'm like, yeah, I can't wait for Metal Gear Solid 2. I'm like, what? Why is my memory card full? Now I hate you, Metal Gear Solid 2. You know what you did wrong. You burned me and scorned me.
That's a horrible reason to not play that game, but also a very justified one.
I eventually got back into playing it. I just didn't.
How many years?
So, when it came out. I got it when it came out, but I just never used the camera because I didn't trust it anymore.
Well, you see, Kojima, being the true artist he was,
knew
that by frustrating you, you'd have the most, realistic military experience.
This was actually a prediction for the future on how all information that's digital is corrupt.
This is a metaphor.
It's actually a metaphor, a commentary for oligarchs.
Massive ARG before its time.
I was just going to say, I don't want to gloss over the sweepstakes demo discs that were really popular in the late 90s. I mean, think about how many pizzas were purchased from Pizza Hut to try and win 50 grand.
At least one.
From you, maybe. There's a Pizza Hut down the street from where I lived when I was a kid, so I had a couple of the demos. They had like four different variations of it, and it's like they all had different games on them. That's how I experienced Metal Gear Solid 1, actually, for the first time, was on the Pizza Hut demo where I was given the, sorry, you did not win $50,000.
Aw.
A little bit different, but I was more into Pizza Hut for their VHS tapes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, hell yeah.
I've got the first X-Men VHS tape from Pizza Hut sitting on a bookshelf that I can see across the room. And wait,
the 90s X-Men or the 80s one?
90s.
Okay, cool. That was one for the 80s. It only lasted one episode and it's donezo.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah, and so like, it's kind of funny that a lot of these restaurant chains would do demos, not just of games, but also of TV shows, movies, etc. that like you could get. I mean, you used to be able to buy VHS tapes at Pizza Hut, of all places.
And
so
Burger King.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. That's true. So it's very interesting to me that like that was a common model of like, yeah, come get food and also buy a game, like, or watch a movie.
But it worked. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I can, like I said, like I wanted to go to Pizza Hut all the damn time to get those demo discs. one reason, because I wanted $50,000 and being a child didn't understand how that worked. But also because, hey, something else I can play on my PlayStation 1 that I don't have any games for except Jet Moto 2. And I got very tired of that very fast.
I think
good old Mountain Dew the Racer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think this is the perfect time to bring up Sneak King for the Xbox 360.
Yeah, I remember that.
It's not the 90s.
No.
It's the 2000s.
That was a full game. That was not a demo.
Yeah. Oh my god.
You know, but that stuff still carries it.
But you got it at Burger King.
It's true.
We had Pocket Racers too.
Yeah.
And it worked on Xbox original or 360 because it had both games. Yep, it had both versions on the same disc.
Look at Burger King being pro-consumer, understanding that the customer experience is the best thing they can do for you.
Yeah.
Like, you put it into the 360, it would load the 360 version. You put it in the original Xbox, it would load the original Xbox version. And
distorted. Nerd sounds like somebody who's gone through their training.
Yeah, I've gone through their corporate training on the Philips CDI. Oh,
sorry, it's been a bad.
Those games are not good, though.
No, they're awful, but, like, screw
the best
it,
kind
you know?
Of awful.
Yeah. Oh, what was it? The one I wanted to bring up before we left off of these demo discs is the one that was a nightmare for a lot of people. When Beautiful Joe, I think it's one or two, one of them, if you put your disc in to play the demo of Beautiful Joe, which sucks because it also has a demo of, what I think, Tekken 3 as well.
So it is Beautiful Joe 2.
Oh, is it 2? Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it is because I actually have this demo disc over in the other room because when I learned about it, I was like, I need to own this. This needs to be in my room at all times.
But your disc is cursed. It is horribly cursed.
It is, and that's why I need it.
No, so like, here's what you'd do. If you put the disc in and you still have your memory card inside your PlayStation, it will erase all your data on your memory card. That's it. And then put in, I think it also corrupted it too, so you couldn't undo
it. What it did is it corrupted every single file on the memory card.
Oh, that's much better.
And I don't remember if it would let you reformat it. Like, I think it was that bad of a corruption that it just screwed the whole thing.
I remember that PlayStation came out with a letter like, our bad.
Yeah, it was like, whoops.
Oopsie doodle.
Happy holidays. You need a new memory card.
Enjoy. But yeah, sometimes discs didn't work out great for that one. Now, we still keep moving on with discs in the mailers because magazines and such will still be a thing for a while until we start getting into Xbox and Xbox Live, where you could just download the demos from wherever and just take it and take it digitally for it.
Now, this is where I lived. The Xbox, the Xbox Live demo section is where I lived for many years.
This was kind of a double-edged sword for me back then, but I'm very curious on how Ash would swam through this humongous ocean of demos.
Hey, Ashwood, you got Uno on your Xbox?
I do have Uno on my Xbox because it is but I only have the demo for it. But no, so we grew up poor, so we didn't have a lot of money, so we didn't have money for games. So what we would do is pay for Xbox Live to be able to play with our friends. But that was where all of the gaming money would go for the month or for the year. And so we would play in the Xbox Live demo store all sorts of different games that would come out monthly. And you would have like this phenomenal selection of terrible games. like some were great. Some were great. There was the Shadowrun demo for a game that I believe never came out. Or it did come out and then was reformatted back into the demo servers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, that came out.
Mm-hmm. but we played the demo nonstop for hours on end. And we would, like, for months to years. My roommate even booted up the old demo last year during the summer. And nice. It was still hosted. There are still people hosting that demo.
That is so crazy.
So, I mean, did any of you guys play the Fusion Frenzy demo?
Yeah,
I never buy the full game. I just keep playing the demo because it was just so much content.
Yeah, it was weirdly a large amount of content for that one game. I'm like, okay, what if we got the full version? But why, though?
And you all wonder why they don't do demo discs anymore. You're the problem.
Now, listen, Prey 2 had a demo. And the demo was buy it, play it for less than 2 hours, and return it on Steam. We did this. No, but legitimately, the devs for Prey 2 did that. They released Prey 2, and people were like, well, I'd really like a demo to see if I like it. And they were like, play it for less than 2 hours and return it if you don't like it. That's your demo.
Like, that's such a shitty like thing to say and do.
It was, they got so much flack for it.
At least to be honest, I mean.
But there's a lot of games that I picked up because I was able to play a demo for it. There's just some where I was like, oh, this isn't really for me. But then there's some that was like, oh, I have to have this because this is incredible. But I have demos, and I'll mess around in them, and like there's a lot that I've decided to pick up because the demo was really good, so it works. Demos should always be a thing.
So, I mean, okay, so this is going to sound really bad, but I actually treated piracy as demoing for a long time because it's like, do I really want to drop $150 on this game? Which is, I mean, if you convert it to what it costs now, it's like, oh, yeah, no, that's going to cost you like $4,000. It's like, do you want to really drop that kind of money on this without knowing how it plays first? The answer is no.
I mean, is it piracy if you were never going to buy it to begin with?
Technically, yes.
No, because again, some of these games that I did this with, I did buy. They didn't cost $4,000, but I mean, that was a poor example because I think the most expensive one is like $2,000 at this point, but I digress. The point is, video games are stupid expensive sometimes, especially if they're older and didn't sell well originally, but they can also be amazing. So, you know, piracy was like, oh, I'm going to try it. If I like it, I'm going to go and find a way to get my hands on it at some point. And that happened quite a bit. And I'm sometimes ashamed to admit that I have paid, unfortunately, too much for some games. But, I mean...
I've done the same thing.
Does it count as piracy? I'm not a lawyer. I'm not at liberty to discuss what is or isn't considered piracy.
This also works.
Also, as a disclaimer, GTP is not telling you what to do or not to do.
Yeah.
Just as not telling you where to get it.
When the first game I ever...
Your host file, you can get in there.
The first game I ever pirated was Sid Meier's Pirates back in 2007 or 2008. Oh yeah, but now I've bought it on Steam and the PSP, so I own it, and I don't have it on. I don't have the downloaded one that was so long ago, but it worked. But I did play the whole demo. I did play the whole game.
Hello, Sid Meier. Can I come in?
What are you, a vampire? No,
I did play the whole game.
You don't know what Sid Meier is.
I've paid for it twice now because I love the game so much.
To be fair, it is actually a really fun game, so...
It is super fun. I really like it.
I mean, I really like the ship combat.
Sid Meier could be a vampire. He made that weird Darklands game, and there's a vampire running around that. Can't say he didn't.
Valid.
I was a good law-abiding boy who never downloaded anything illegally.
I have never heard Dane lie harder.
You know, in polygraphs, as long as you say you did something, they don't care.
No, in polygraphs, if you clench your butthole really tightly, it'll...
They actually have special... They have pads for that now.
No, I thought that this would work forever.
But I've been practicing my Kegels.
It used to be, if you clench your butthole the whole time, everything looks like a lie. And
that's
so then they can't
tell
the truth from a lie.
Tell them I have to poop, so this is happening, man.
But I guess they have pads for that now, and that's...
Yeah. They increase your stress level, and they can't actually get a good baseline.
Yeah. Dang it, everything is ruined now.
But just remember, they're going to give you a 35-page questionnaire before you go in, and the goal is just to make you screw up and not remember what you put on the things. That's the entire goal.
The actual
polygraph doesn't work.
Look, I've taken the SAT before, okay? I think I know what I'm doing.
It's not admissible in court anyway, so...
Well, it's not. I can say this as someone with a TS clearance, that this is how they do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So... Anyway, back to demos.
Demoing
I don't want
to
demo jail.
Yeah. I think Time Out was a demo for jail. Like a child's demo for jail.
Anyway, unfortunately, like, this is... We are now gotten to the fall of demos. So here's the problem. Demos are already coming around with Xbox Live and a lot of different shareware things. But at this point in time, we also have, like, people who are wanting to put out demos from Kickstarters or demos from different other, like, ways to get other funds for it. And then crap out on everybody. And so, like, there's a thing in, when looking into this subject, it was kind of a weird timeline that you bump into. So, video games in the 2000s and such are becoming more commonplace than they've ever been. Okay? That's safe to say, across the board. You have your independent game designers, you have your AAAs, you have your AAs, You have just the guys who make all over the place. And it's like, even Ashwin, you would know, the Xbox Live had something like thousands of demos sitting down there, right?
Yeah.
But the thing is that once you had those demos, what you'd end up having is the demo would be the best part and the most worked on section of the game. The rest would be trashed or non-existent. And so people kept feeling like the rug was pulled just underneath you because, frankly, I bought this game where I was going to be an elf flying through the skies, fighting a vampire. Turns out I started my story as I was flying through a vampire, and now I'm a peasant farming, and that's the end of the game. Or the games are super short. Like, they would only make it for, like, the game would only be, like, 20 minutes long. The first 10 minutes was the demo. So, like, they just gave up on you, or not even get made at all. Like, they would invest into the funds for it, and that's it. The demo is as long far as you can get, if you can get the demo at all. And so what they would do is that instead of making games with a demo, they'd go the opposite. Make the game without the demo, so buyer beware, and let's hope you will purchase the game itself. And it was a real struggle, and the problem with that is this weird statistic for that. Games at the time, which had demos, actually sold less games than the ones without a demo. So why put the effort into making a demo when you could just make the whole game for it and hope that the word of mouth will get you moving around?
Yeah, there's a whole soapbox I could get on if you want to hear this.
I don't know. Zombie Head over here was confessing to crimes.
Well, no. So essentially what you had was in the early 90s to late 90s and early 2000s, you had limitations of bandwidth and distribution, right?
Right.
And so basically you had gatekeepers that controlled the distribution and displaying of these demos and things like that. So there was a lot of the system was manipulated to favor certain individuals and games that were, you know, from more reputable publishers, stuff like that. So the indie scene was almost non-existent in the 90s just based on that distribution. And then you reached the early 2000s when broadband internet became a little bit more widespread, because I remember I paid for FilePlanet subscriptions to have access to stuff where I could download it quicker, just because that was, you know, broadband was a premium back then.
Oh, but yeah.
With the democratization of gaming distribution through platforms like Steam, GOG, stuff like that, you had access to more games than you ever could possibly imagine, to where you're just basically trying to sell people on a thumbnail. So there was just a dramatic shift in terms of where the market was going, because if you share someone a demo, that may not be enough, and that might just satiate them enough before they move on to the next thing, because ultimately there's so many more options out there. You got to make sure they at least buy and get access to it in order to, you know, sink your teeth into it. Because if you give them anything for free, they're just going to walk away because there's a million other opportunities and other things out there you can participate with.
Mm-hmm. That is on the nail of why demos died out in the 2000s and mid 2000s.
That'll get off my soapbox.
Well, I'll switch you places. So, because that's where the problem lied. If your demo showed that your game was bad, nobody would want to buy your game. So don't make the demo unless I can get the kinks out of it. And we're not even getting to that level of stuck in alpha stage where some games are.
Development has always been in a pre-alpha.
Yeah, but still in pre-alpha. Hasn't got left alpha yet. Why bother leaving pre-alpha? And that's a whole different topic altogether.
Yeah, like Star Citizen.
Cop.
$500 million later.
We're getting there. What was the old joke? Duke Nukem Forever? Like, it'll be done when it gets done. Also, Duke Nukem Forever is probably the worst example for it. There was a demo for Duke Nukem Forever back in the 90s, and then another demo for tech demo back in the early 2000s, and that thing went through like four. It was the epitome of development hell.
The guy was crazy. He switched engines like three times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No. If you want to take a look into Duke Nukem Forever, it is the video game equivalent of hubris.
Well, I think someone actually ended up finding the 98 source code and remaking that first level, I think.
That sounds amazing.
And dropping that, yeah.
Like, the thing is that by the time Duke Nukem was a hot programmati in the 90s, but by the time it finally came out, yeah. And if you had a demo for any kind of RPG, that was a double-edged sword, because whatever demo that you have, you're only going to give a person like 1/100th of what should be in the game. And then just present, hey, this game is X, like, what was it, back in the late 90s and early 2000s? Telling someone that your game is has 100 hours of content in it was a selling point. But, as I learned from certain, like, open world games, 100 hours is debatable on if they were a fun 100 hours on that.
Yeah, like, how much of that 100 hours is you walking from point A to point B?
Mm-hmm. But so, it's weird to say that the market kind of righted itself on this one, because what would happen is that so many people didn't make demos and just put it out there, but so many bad actors came out with that, that ended up bringing demos back as sort of, hey, no, no, we're legit, we're real, here's the demo, play it, if you like it, great, keep it, if not, you're fine. And then one of the big things that happened was Steam. About, I want to say it's 2008, 2010-ish, when Steam introduced their revolutionary policy of, if you bought the game digitally, you could return it. Remember, people forget, digital returns are kind of a newer thing. It used to be, if you bought a game digitally, and I still have a stockpile of games in my I have a marker on all my Steam games that says, this game is crap, why did I think to buy this? And just a list of games there for, do never play this again, you've regretted this for your life.
Oh yeah, I have a completed games good folder and a completed games bad folder.
Yeah, see?
I have on Steam completed games will play again and completed games will never play again. And it might be that I loved the game, but I'm never going to play it again for whatever reason. That's pretty rare. But I do have quite a few games where I'm like, I hate this. And it's in never playing again.
Yeah. Someone sent me a message once to, like, because they knew I had this copy of this really, really obscure, crappy game. And they're like, hey, do you still have this game? I go, technically, I have it on Steam. And they're like, and they sent me a message. So I kind of want to see if I can get a copy of that because I need to preserve this for prosperity. And then I sent them a large message that said, you remember how this game worked. Why are we doing this? Who wants to keep this crappy game? I'm like, fine, I'll install it, send it over for you. As a historian, I understand keeping, preserving for historical record. That's my jam. It's a thing I love to do.
Speaking of which, not sponsored, but GOG is awesome.
Yep. However, that doesn't mean I don't critique the game as being, it is not worth my time or anyone else's, because this is crud.
Also valid.
I mean, would you say the Philips CDI Burger King training game is not worth it? How dare you?
There's a niche for that. Clearly, we brought that up 6 times in this podcast alone. There is
brought
a niche.
To you by Burger King.
I can assure you it's worth it. I also don't organize my Steam library because I got better things to do.
Oh, Dane, but do you love every game that you have on Steam? Do you?
No. But why would I want to organize, take the time to like move it into its own special folder? It's dead to me. I can ignore it.
I have one.
Hang on, Zombie. I got to say this. Because one day, mm-hmm. one day you'll be on a bender. You'll just out partying with friends.
Sounds
and you're
like
you're
going
to come back. And then once you're done with this party and you're like, oh, man, you know what would be getting my jams? I'm going to go play this game. But what game fits me? Hey, remember that title? Why did
Leo,
I put it?
Just because this happened to you the other day when you were looking for one of, I think, your railroad games that you were going to play. And you were like, one of these is bad and one of these is good. And I don't remember which it is. So I'm just going to play it because I want to. And it was the bad one.
Yeah, yeah. But to be fair,
if you
that's
put
because...
that in a side folder, you would know.
Was it Yukon Railroad Tycoon or just Railroad Tycoon? Is that the one?
No, Railroad Tycoon is pretty awesome. It was Railroad Corporation was the one I wanted to look up.
Okay.
But then there was a knockoff version, which wasn't very well designed. Or actually, it was really well designed. I found it confusing, and I don't like it. But I wanted to play it because Spice and Rose called me a robber baron once, and I'm like, now I'm jonesing to get back into the rails.
She wasn't wrong.
And then. Good train game, but bad UI.
Yeah.
Bastardly.
Mm-hmm. I can't go around with just a toot toot of this railroad. I need to be able to like set up corporate lines and feed people.
I need to set up a company store over here.
Yeah.
I think I just want the chaos in my life of not knowing what games I have or don't have.
See, I have one. I mean, I do have a few, but mostly I get angry at some games and I'm like, I'm never playing you again. But there is one I have. It's a dynamic list that I keep intact because it's one where I can say, like, anytime a game with this particular tag enters my library, and it's the horror tag because I love horror games, but also every year for my charity stream, I do the Scream stream. And so having my horror games like right there on hand for me to just scroll through easily makes it easier for me to decide what I'm going to play while waiting for donations.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, don't get me wrong. Live your life. Live your truth, y'all. If you want to organize your Steam library, you go nuts. You have a great time.
I will.
That's awesome. I'm genuinely happy for you.
I don't need that. That zombie hand, because I also have a spooky December tag. That's yes. Just horror games for when I play them in December.
Oh, nice. I love spooky games all year round whenever I'm in the mood for them, but I love doing my Scream stream in November, but I should do spooky December. That would be fun.
Nightmare Before Christmas.
It's my, no, like real horror games. But
it's a nightmare.
I love, my birthday's in December, and Parasite Eve is the perfect game to play during December, after Christmas, between Christmas and New Year's, because that's when the game takes place. It's perfect.
Brought to you by Cross Media Crusade.
I should do that. I should play horror games in December. That would be fun.
And see, the thing is, I got hooked to Parasite Eve because I got to play the demo to Parasite Eve, and that's an amazing game.
We got there.
But I played the but there was, this was the dark ages when there was no demos on Steam. You just had to play it where it lies and hope for the best. And that's why I went over back to GOG for a while, because GOG, I knew what was getting into. They're like, okay, this is going to be, you remember this game is from 1987. I'm like, give it to me. I'll have it done in like 10 minutes, I guess. It's not that great, but I'll do it. But now demos are coming back in sort of kind of like a weird way to prove, hey, no, we're real. We're here. Get used to it. This is a great game. Please play this.
And now we call it Early Access.
Yeah. I mean, Early Access started that way. That's what Early Access was supposed to be.
It's very true.
And capitalism ruined it.
Mm-hmm.
So you're telling me I could never release the game and just make more money?
It's an infinite money glitch.
Yeah, it's weird.
Only if your game is good enough. Not every game can have that infinite money glitch.
I don't know. There's some pretty terrible games that just release under early access and they still get a ton of attention.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was that one? We all played it. Dane, we played it a lot when it was. It's the corporation collecting trash.
Lethal Company.
Lethal Company. Yeah, that was early access, but it received such wide acclaim that it basically just put itself as a standalone of gaming for a couple of months for streamers.
It's a fun game for sure.
So I know you can get the demo for back in the COVID days, back in the 2020s, you could get the demo of not Lethal Company, Among Us, and you'd be able to Among play Us. It with anybody who had Among Us. Not even the full version, just anybody who had Among Us. Mm-hmm. And there's some novel systems for that. Like, I wouldn't call this a demo, but as a feature, Jackbox, where you literally did not have to own, well, as long as one person had that game, everybody could play Jackbox, and you could have like 100 people if you picked the right game on that.
Hell yeah.
Or another way to go, which was weird DLC wise, but I thought it was genius with, I don't know if Payday 2 was the first one to do it. I know it's the earliest one I experienced. If the host had the DLC was available for all players, but only the host needed to have the game to make that work. When it first came out and didn't get like redone like 4 times, now it's kind of, That's a weird place to be. But yeah, personally, as far as demos goes, I think demos are a smart idea, but they're also a confidence builder. If you are confident in yourself, in your game enough to put out a demo, then you're confident enough to say, hey, here it is. enjoy, and maybe you come back for the whole thing. It's the appetizer of your gaming experience.
That being said, it could also be a confidence destroyer if everyone just shits on your demo real hard. I mean, it could lead to course correction, too. I mean, there's a lot of good that could come from it.
Well, I mean, you have, like, different examples of even Fortnite, for example, when it first released, was a really weird survival fucking building game, and then it turned into a battle royale game. Yeah. And that was kind of, the game was still basically in open access at that point before, once it pivoted, then it became this global giant thing. So you never know what a demo can demonstrate to the creators that they need to change.
True. Scott Kaufman is one that's kind of famous for that one. That's how he ended up coming up with Five Nights at Freddy's, because his original game people didn't like because they thought all the monsters in there took, they sent messages of, man, this game is weird. Also, everything looks like broken animatronics. And he basically went, I'll show you a creepy animatronic. And just built it out. It's like, you know, get this game going. And now, you know, Scott Kaufman's got Scott Kaufman money. I think
that Matthew Lillard's in his movie money. Yeah.
True.
Wasn't that how Minecraft started originally? Was a demo site?
I mean, it was a
no. I think
standalone release package where you could buy a version of it and then you just have it forever.
Yeah, it was a weird case. So that's kind of everything I could think of for demos, because we're now back to where we are modern days, and I don't know. Out of crazy story, demo-based stories, I don't think there's anything more to that at this point. Because demos are just kind of, you kind of figure out which way you want to distribute. You, as a game designer, figures out if you're confident enough to put it out a demo or not. If you want to keep your game in alpha status, just make sure everyone knows it. I think being upfront is a better option than to just try to trick everybody.
You claiming that honesty is the best policy?
Or, hear me out, you take $500 million and then just keep trying to do a bunch of weird flex goals and then never release your game.
That is an option. Not one.
That's how I'd do it personally. But
is the $500 million the flex that you're flexing on this flex goal?
Yeah, yeah. The $500 million be like, well, I'm going to run off and, you know, you know, non-extradition to Caribbean islands, I could definitely live on, you know, whatever.
But yeah, that's about it as far as this episode goes. I don't think there's anything more to that, unless you have a crazy demo story, because I do have one that I've had to deal with, which was hilarious, because it was with the Sid Meier's Civilization game, because like I said before, I got that as a demo originally, and then I lost it, then I got it as a demo again, and then I went in and I changed some of the coding of the demo so I could get to the other side of the game. But then I lost it. And then I got it again on the older PC. Then that PC got, I lost that whole PC. The whole PC is gone. Not the game.
I mean, that was a fun thing of demos of the era, when like, if an RTS game or turn-based strategy game like that came out, and typically a lot of those would be the full game, but there'd just be a turn limiter on it. Mm-hmm. So all you would do is open it in like a Word file, and then you just edit the amount of turns you had to like 99999, and then you could play that game forever and had the full game basically. So that was always something I did back then.
Did you guys ever like challenge yourself as a demo? Like, this demo can only be beaten in like, you have 20 minutes to play this game. Like, I think I can make it in 15. I did that with Judge Dredd when that demo was around there.
Oh,
it was
God,
only
the
like
one
the first two levels.
Like the side scrolling one or the Judge Dredd versus Death?
No, the side scrolling one, the one that came out for the SNES and the Genesis. God, but
that one.
Yeah, it's not great. However, I wanted to, that was part of the tournament that was set up for like Blockbuster, so I needed practice.
Oh God, the Alcatraz Blockbuster Super Tournament or whatever the fuck.
Yeah. Was. There was two games for it. It was, one of them was NBA Jam and the other one, no. Yes, for that one it was NBA Jam and the other one was Judge Dredd. And you had to get the most amount of scoids in, you had to get the most of, highest amount of score in the shortest amount of time. And that was sort of where it tricked you, because since the other game is NBA Jam, your best bet to get all, as many points as possible was back in Judge Dredd.
Or just, you know, just throw elbows the entire time.
Elbows. Elbows it up.
Mm-hmm. I don't have a demo that I did a challenge on, and I know I've told this story on the podcast before, but when my brother accused me of breaking our PS1, and it wasn't my fault, I got very mad at him, and I took it out on the demo disc that had the demos for Tomb Raider 1 and Tekken 3. And I used to beat the shit out of Eddie with Xiaoyu, I think her name was.
Lin Xiaoyu.
A lot. And then I also used to go around the Tomb Raider demo finding every creative way I could to kill Lara Croft. I was mad at my brother, and I think that was my villain origin story, but I'm not really a villain. I'm a marshmallow. But that's my biggest demo story, is the Final Fantasy VIII demo being wild and then taking my anger out on Tekken 3 and Lara Croft.
What about you, Ashwood?
Yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, we lived off of the demos. So a lot of my early gaming came from demos on the Xbox Live store, like stuff like Phantasy Star Online.
We would play that was a good one.
Because it was a multiplayer demo, we could all load up into the same session and we could play together without ever having to play for the real game. So,
and that was 56K, y'all.
Hell yeah. So, yeah, demos are great. Demos are great. We should support demos.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, what was it? I still love that. Some of those demos, like, okay, we could do this, but I'm having fun with this game. Let me have this whole version. This is all I need. All right. What about you, Dane?
I don't really have, like, a demo story. They're just neat, and I like them, and I miss them. I did find out, we mentioned it a little bit earlier, but there is a copy of a game that I'm looking forward to trying to buy when I go to a convention later this month that has a demo of Final Fantasy VII on it. It's one of the versions I don't own yet, so looking forward to picking that up if I can.
Ooh, you're going to have to give me that list, buddy, because I'm going to be hunting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think we're all going to be hunting.
Well, you mentioned it earlier. It's Total Number 1 is the one that I'm looking for. Although, I wouldn't mind if for some reason they have the Square's Previews version or the international version. I wouldn't mind getting those either.
Oh.
But Total Number 1 comes with a copy of Final Fantasy VII, a demo. Yep. So, and I don't own it yet. Mm-hmm. So that's my demo story.
It's actually a fun fighting game, so it's worth it.
What about you, Brandon?
I mean, I actually only just remembered this as you were asking about stories. So I'm like, do I have a story? And kind of. Like, when I first got my PlayStation 1, my mother's friend was arguing about whether or not the demo disc it had playable demos. Like, if you could actually play them. I was like, it literally says playable on it. And she's like, no, that just means it'll play the video. It's not going to actually let you play the game. I was like, okay. Yeah, showed her. because what do you know? I got to play Blast Chamber, the demo. Mm-hmm.
Blast Chamber was a fun game, too.
That was the pack-in demo. What it had Blast Chamber and like three or four other games on it. Don't remember the others. Mm-hmm. I just remember Blast Chamber.
All right. What about you, Ian?
I think I kind of shared with you my experiences. I was primarily, for the demo disc scene was primarily a PC game type guy. So it was always Computer Gaming World and PC Gamer were the ones I invested most of my time in. And just the whole FMV environment that PC Gamer kind of projected around that time, especially just the way they showed you content in a pre-internet era, well, a pre-internet distribution era, it was just amazing, and I have a very fond, nostalgic feelings for that time. And they're gone forever, unfortunately. But yeah.
Unfortunately, yeah. There is one last tale I want to bring up, because this happened to be literally last year. So, for those who don't know, in various, especially in the Pacific Northwest, there's actually a big scene for making your own video game using television graphics or using old Nintendo schematics and such. So, basically making retro games that are new, but also retro at the same time. Yeah. So somebody was showing me the demo to this game I could not remember the name. I just remember it was interesting because it was like a, 1980s, game where you would take. It took place in 1980s. It was in Sao Paulo, Brazil, and you had to navigate for to find like two different items so that way you could stop this demon horde that's coming up. And there were random combat encounters, and everything was randomized for that one. Now, the reason why I bring this up is the sad news is when I played it, I probably could not have rolled better. Took a left, found that first item, took a right, found the second item, and the clue to glue these things together happened to be right where I started. So I won, beat the entire game in four moves. Nat is someone who needs... I'm like, the concept's amazing, but at this point I beat the whole game. Somehow. Without trying much.
Damn, bro.
But...
Leo's over here being like, guys, what does new high score mean? Is that good?
Yeah. But that is
just about... needs three letters for the leaderboard. How about ASS?
Nailed it.
The greatest arcade player of all time.
It's Alan Steven Schwartz.
Steven Anita Smith.
Sass.
American dad joke, sorry.
Oh, yeah. With that being said, our next episode, well, this might be out into the end of the year. Our next episode will be sometime in 2026. Hi, everybody. This is Leo from the editing booth. Just letting everybody know that we'll have one more episode in December on the 19th. That also being said, just to let everybody know, for the month of January, we're taking a break from the podcast, so there'll be no new episodes coming out in January, but they'll start again in February of 2026. Can't wait to see you guys there. And now, let's get back to the show. And if you guys are out, check us out. I think that's going to be amazing. And thank you again, Ian, for coming to this episode.
Always fun to be here.
All right. And with that being said, this is Gaming Theater Podcast. Logging out. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
See ya.